Good morning, everyone. There's a proverb from the 1930s that goes like this: behind every great man is a great woman. It's been used for many years to highlight the often unacknowledged or underestimated contributions and support provided by women to the success of men. When we think about the patriarchs in Genesis, it can be easy to overlook the important contributions made by the women in their lives. It's easy to think of them as just the wife of Abraham or Jacob, or the mother of Isaac and Jacob, and not as an individual who God used to help fulfill the three promises that God made to Abraham. So I think a better phrasing of that proverb is, beside every great man is a great woman. It more accurately shows the kind of relationship that, in particular, Abraham and Sarah had. And while Sarah may not be mentioned as often as Abraham was, she still had her own big moments, and a lot can be learned from the stories that she's mentioned in. My name's Jake. I'm the ministry apprentice here at Picton Wilton Anglican, and it's a pleasure to be with you here this morning. We're continuing our series in Genesis chapters 12 to 50, and you can see on the slide where we're going to be heading. Previously, Ben has introduced the three big promises made to Abraham by God. The first promise was of land and how the land of Canaan was going to be for Abraham's descendants to possess. Second was a promise of offspring, that Abram would have so many offspring it would become a nation. And the third promise was that Abram's line would be a blessing to all nations, first as a nation of Israel, but ultimately through Jesus Christ. Scott then explained last week in more detail about Abraham and his various kinds of faith, but how ultimately Abraham was a man of obedience to God. Today we're going to be looking at Sarah and her life, and we're going to look at her life through the lens of the three promises that God made to Abram: land, offspring, and blessing. And we're going to see how God is faithful to these promises through Sarah. So let's see how Sarah is both a blessing and a curse in two different situations. This chapter's been covered a bit by Ben and Scott already, but it is worthwhile looking back at. In Genesis chapter 12, Abraham and Sarah, they travel to Egypt because of a severe famine throughout the land that they're in, and Abraham passes Sarah off as his sister. He's afraid the Egyptians will kill him, but Sarah lets Sarah live because they know that she's his wife. Well, when they arrive in Egypt, the Pharaoh of the time notices Sarah because of how beautiful she is. So he just goes and takes her. The Egyptians treat Abraham well, and he becomes very rich and well off because of this. He acquires sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and a whole lot of camels. But God also curses the Egyptians by inflicting some serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household. We see again in chapter 20 of Genesis that Abraham and Sarah pull off the same stunt with Abimelech, the king of Gerar. In this particular instance, the king also took Sarah into his palace, like Pharaoh did, but he has a dream in which God speaks to him and warns him, "Do not touch Sarah." God also curses Abimelech's household so that they could not conceive. Abimelech returns Sarah to Abraham eventually, and as well as giving him sheep and cattle, and male and female slaves, he also gives him 1,000 shekels of silver. So we can see God fulfilling his promise that through Sarah he will bless those who bless Abraham and curse those who curse them. Firstly, God blesses Abraham as he's blessed by the Egyptians and Abimelech. Although it seems that Abraham has to lie to survive, he does become wealthy. God uses the two nations to bless Abraham and set him up despite there being a famine. But God doesn't just stop there. He also curses the Egyptians and the Canaanites because they take Sarah away from Abraham. God inflicts serious diseases on the two kings' households because of Sarah. Despite the deception of Abraham and Sarah, and as one commentator put it, their fainting fits of faith, try to say that 10 times fast, God's plan to bring blessings to all nations was still on course. He was faithful to the promise that he made at the start of chapter 12 to bless and curse those who bless and curse Abraham and Sarah. He continued to protect the people he chooses to execute his plan of salvation, despite the failures of these people. This isn't the only time that God uses the weakness and failure of his chosen people to fulfill his promises. Later on in Genesis, we're going to see Jacob take his birthright and blessing from Esau using deception and trickery. He does not trust in God's faithfulness to his promises, and so resorts to doing things in his own strength. But God still uses Jacob as a blessing to all nations. From Jacob come the tribes of Israel and ultimately Jesus. This is still the case for us today. We as the church must understand that God's plan and God's kingdom will come because God will see to it, and not because we are outstanding members of Jesus' cheer squad. Despite all of our failures and all of our shortcomings, God's plan is still going to fall into place. God will use our weaknesses for his glory. We can have confidence that God will be faithful to his people, as we have seen these kinds of examples to learn from. Sarah and Abraham may not have had the same kind of faith that they should have had, but God still used them for his purpose. Of the three promises made by God to Abraham, offspring is the one that we most closely associate Sarah with. God's faithfulness to Sarah, despite her old age, shows he's in control of all things and his timing is perfect. Although God had promised to Abraham that Sarah would give birth to a child, it had been at least 10 years since that very first promise. Sarah had still not conceived, and so she tried to force the issue. She uses her slave girl Hagar as a vessel for her child. Chapter 16 reveals how Sarah's disbelief in God's power leads to unnecessary stress and conflict. God had laid out his promises multiple times to Abraham by now, and Sarah clearly saw herself as being some sort of a failure. Despite being the head of the household, and that included multiple servants and their children, she herself was barren. The longer this went on, the more her hope subsided of ever becoming a mother. She may have thought that she had lost the Lord's favor, and so she started to go and try to fix the issue in her own way. There are a couple ways in which a childless couple could acquire a child back in those days. One was through adoption, and the other was mentioned in the laws of Hammurabi, whereby a wife could present one of her slave girls to her husband to conceive a child for the marriage, which is what Sarah chose to do. To us, it may seem like a bit of a weird idea, a bit of an unusual method of trying to fix things, but it's a fairly common practice in those days, almost an early form of surrogacy. And what's Abraham's response to this? Does he stick to trusting in God's faithfulness to the promises? No. In fact, he has a very similar response to that of Adam in the Garden of Eden. Even in such an important manner, he simply says, "Whatever you want, dear." And he just moves on. The correct response should have been, "Well, if God hasn't allowed you to conceive yet, then it's not the right time." What follows causes a rift in family life between husband and wife. Hagar falls pregnant, starts to despise Sarah. Sarah begins to abuse Hagar to the extent that she runs away. And Abraham doesn't want anything to do with the whole situation. In hindsight, it's easy to see that Sarah's plan to fix the issue of not having kids was not part of God's plan. It just leads to further bitterness and hopelessness. But God had not forgotten Sarah. We skip ahead to chapter 21 and see that through Sarah and Abraham's faith, that though Sarah and Abraham's faith had been severely tested for more than 20 years, God had stood by his promise. At the right time and in the right place, Sarah bore Abraham a son. And now we have a new era beginning. God's covenant now falls onto Isaac, as he was Abraham's rightful heir. One commentator put Sarah's reaction like this: "As for Sarah, the impossible had happened. Her happiness knew no bounds, and the congratulations of her neighbours brought them in to share in the God-given laughter. What a relief it must have been for Sarah to finally have the child promised to her over 20 years ago. She was not a failure. God had not forgotten her. Her child would be the one to continue to be a blessing to all nations. It must have been so hard for Sarah to wait nearly 20 years for a child, having already been barren for 70 years previous. In his book, It Happens After Prayer, Pastor Charles provides the following helpful illustration of why God often makes us wait for the answer to our prayers. One hot afternoon, a certain woman walked to her neighbour's produce stand to buy grapes. The line was long, but each person seemed to get special attention. But she waited patiently. When she finally made it to the front of the line, the owner asked her for an order. She asked for grapes. "Please excuse me for a minute," was the answer. Then the owner walked away and disappeared behind a building. For some reason, this rubbed the woman the wrong way. Everyone in line before her was greeted warmly, given special attention. And most importantly, they were served immediately. But she was forced to wait. And when she got to the front of the line, she was forced to wait extra. She was offended. She felt the owner took her regular business for granted, and so the longer she waited, the angrier she became. But finally, the produce stand owner reappeared, and with a big smile, he presented her with the most beautiful grapes you've ever seen. He invited her to taste them. She had never tasted grapes so good. As she turned to leave with her delicious grapes, he stopped her. "Oh yeah, I'm sorry I kept you waiting," said the farmer, "but I needed the time to give you my very best." How long have you been in line waiting on God to get your request? How long have you been waiting in line for God to meet a need, solve a problem, or open a door? When delay seems never ending, there is encouragement here to persevere. Keep on praying. Don't give up. God is faithful to his people and will keep the promises that he has made to us. In chapter 23, we can see that Sarah is the first to be buried in Canaan, and a portion of the land is possessed for the very first time. In verse 1 and verse 19, it mentions that Sarah dies near Hebron, and the rest of the chapter deals with Abraham buying the land for what's essentially a cemetery. It can be easy to skip over chapter 23 as just a small moment in a much, much bigger story. But there's a deeper meaning to it than just telling us where Sarah died and was buried. While it may seem like a good explanation of how real estate was dealt with back then, it actually points us back to one of the promises made to Abraham. In verses 2 and 19, it specifically mentions that they're in Canaan, and verses 4, 9, 18, and 20 reference possession or property. This is a direct link to the promises made by God in chapter 12. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." And already here in chapter 23, the promise of the land is beginning to be fulfilled. It may seem like it's not much. It's just a land, a bit of a parcel of land for a cemetery. But all the same, it's part of the real estate that God has promised to Abraham. This small beginning can nevertheless pack a big wallop. Sarah's death and burial are a glimpse of God fulfilling his promise to Abraham and Sarah's descendants that would one day own and occupy the land of Canaan. Suppose there's an evening meeting of a Christian fellowship on a university campus. Say it finishes about 9:30 or 10. At last, there are just several students around talking, and as an act of courtesy, one of the guys offers to walk one of the girls back to her dormitory across campus. It's a lovely, somewhat crisp February night, and they chat as they walk, stop a few moments, and watch the ducks in the campus pond. Next day, she sends the man a thank you note through campus mail, telling him how grateful she is for his thoughtfulness last night in accompanying her to her dorm. And she includes the line, "I had a perfectly marvelous time." What will he make of that? Well, he'll be studying late for his European history exam, and he will slide that note out of his backpack and read over those six haunting words. During a lecture on English literature, he opens up that note inside his books and stares at those words while the professor's voice seems to fade into the background. It's just a small thing, just a passing comment. But fuel enough in that to keep him going for 2 or 3 weeks until he can stir up the courage to ask the girl out. And what brought it on? Simply a short sentence that he couldn't shake. That's the way that Genesis 23 is meant to operate. Whet our appetite and stir our juices by showing us the tiny beginning of God's faithfulness to these promises. And having recognized this, we begin to realize that this is a repeating pattern with God. In the darkest and saddest of times, doesn't he frequently give that small token, that minuscule assurance that certifies that he has not forgotten? It may not be the big, grand gesture that you can see a mile off, but those small things shows that he still cares. God is faithful to the promises that he makes. So we can learn a lot from Sarah's life. She's not just the wife of Abraham or the mother of Isaac. She had her own moments of real doubt and disbelief, but also of faith in the promises made by God. Through her, God blessed Abraham and the nations around them. Through her, God's promises to Abraham continued to live on in Isaac. And through her, the possession of the land of Canaan began. While Sarah had to wait a long time for her son to be born, the Israelite nation had to wait hundreds of years before the complete fulfillment of these promises happened. Jesus' birth was God finally delivering on his promise of a son being the ultimate blessing to all nations. Jesus' death and resurrection brought God's kingdom to God's people in God's place under God's rule and blessing. We must understand that God's plan and God's kingdom will come, not because of how great and mighty we are, but because of how faithful God is to his promises. Despite all of our failings and shortcomings, God's plan is still going to fall into place. And we need to continue to ask God for all things, persevering even when it seems like we have been kept waiting. God wants to hear from us and answer our prayers. Let me finish in prayer. Lord, thank you that you are a God who is faithful to the promises that you make. Thank you that we can trust in your word, knowing you will not let us down. Help us to trust in you, even when it seems like you are not answering our prayers. Let us know that you are a God who is faithful. Amen.